Today it is my great pleasure to talk to Des Mitchell, and unusually we've kind of come out of the Solier Valley and we are looking over the marina of Port Owls. Welcome, Des, to Boat Radio.
Thank you very much. It's wonderful to be here. I mean, this is a place where I'm quite used to anyhow, so I thought it would be a good place.
Well, it's certainly a good place, but I have to take you immediately to the Solier Valley because I know that you are the DJ of choice for many exclusive private house parties in the Solier Valley. Tell us about those.
Yeah, I've done quite a few parties up that end of the world. I actually started going up there many years ago. Obviously, I've been in the island now. This is the end of my 27th year, I came here in 1989 for 3 days. And it's one of those places where you just feel comfortable. I was in Tenerife for 4 years before. When I was asked to come here by BCM, I actually turned around and said, "Where are you?" And they said, "Mallorca." And I said, "Where's that?" And I really kind of left Tenerife with the whole idea of leaving on the Thursday and saying, "Yeah, I'll be back on Monday." And I've never left.
So BCM got you. And BCM, for those worldwide listeners that don't know where it is the first and number one club scene of Magaluf.
It's of Mallorca, I would say. It's it's in the club list. It's number 10 in the world at the moment, which is due to rise back up. It's been up to number 5. I still play there, only not on a resident basis. I play private parties, I play weddings, mainly for friends. House parties are the thing of choice because they're great. And yes, I've done a few in Soyer, yeah. which have been great.
Well, I have to say that there was one particular party where we all knew that Spandau Ballet were in town, and we knew that Alison Moyet were in town, and we knew that you were playing somewhere up in the Solier Valley that day. I mean, was it all the same gig?
No. Exactly. It was actually two gigs.
Right.
And at the one I played, the Spandau Ballet boys came to that one, but also Jamiroquai came as well.
Right.
But nobody knew. He wasn't playing on the island or anything. And also, one of the members of the Lighthouse family, who's friends with somebody here, who knows somebody who I know in Ibiza. Yeah. And that's where they live. I didn't realise that.
Well, I think that that is one feature of the what goes on here that I must give some publicity to, because this is a party island par excellence. I'm not talking about beautiful venues like this. I mean, we are sitting in the upstairs lounge of Key West and we're looking over the most magnificent views. But house party, big parties, I mean, they are every weekend all over the place in Mallorca, certainly up in our mountains, that's for sure. So which other stars have you played alongside for those kind of things?
Well, I've had the luxury and the pleasure to be invited and to play at many parties. Mainly on playing, and I like the playing. I prefer the playing. You're in your own space. You're looking at people enjoying themselves, and you're creating that, and I like that. But I've been known to be at parties with quite a few stars. I'm going to say people like Calvin Harris and Rita Ora. You know, other DJ stars, film stars, TV. I'll tell you what I'm finding a lot now. There's a lot of the TV stars that are, I wouldn't say self-made, they're made by the public, i.e. your celebrity, I'm a celebrity TV stars, your Only Way is Essex TV stars, those kind of people. And the funny thing about that is I'm told who they are, but I don't really have a clue.
You don't have a clue?
I don't watch those programs.
Yeah, yeah.
But that
yeah.
seems to be the way the world is going now. You know, yeah. TV stars seem to be created by people's votes. And the media. The media is a big thing, especially with, you know, Bookface and things like that. Facebook. For the
Bookface. That's great. I love that. Facebook is now, from now on, going to be known as Bookface.
That's what I call it.
Let me take you back to where it all started then. So with an accent like that, it must be in Birmingham somewhere.
Born and bred. I was born in Handsworth. My mother's Jamaican. My parents are Jamaican. My mother actually travelled to England with me during the pregnancy. And I was born in Birmingham, Queen Elizabeth Hospital in Birmingham. That's where I was born. We lived in Handsworth. We moved to Dudley where I finished my schooling. And music was always there, always in our house. My mother used to play Motown tracks, Atlantic Records and things like that. I remember, you know, Chubby Checker, Let's Dance, Let's Twist Again, and Chris Montez.
Yeah, Chris Montez,
yesterday, man. My mother, Sunday afternoons, that was my mother's thing, you see. So I got into music at a very early age. And there was a guy who lived near where I lived in Dudley, and he had a big roadshow, big sound system. And one day he invited me to come with him and help him on a gig, so I became his roadie. And I was 14 then. And that's, he got me into everything. Taught me sound, cables, music, spreading my knowledge of music. Oh, excuse me, that's my phone. I'll just turn that off.
You can tell this is live, listener.
I'm in the middle of an interview. Let me call you back. So, yes, John taught me everything, sound. One of the first tracks I ever heard from him was Supertramp from the album Crime of the Century, and it was Dreamer. And he had a system in his van that was just crystal clear, Tannoy speakers, I'll never forget it. And the sound of the track starting with the bells and everything was just beautiful. And I said, who's this? And he said, Supertramp. And from then onwards, I started to listen to everything from whatever he put on in the van. If it was Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon, AC/DC, Aretha Franklin, Daryl Hall, John Oates, he would listen, Otis Redding, he would listen to everything. And I listened to everything. And because of that, I got to know all sorts of music. And I took that with me wherever I DJed and wherever I played. Then I started doing gigs that if he had a double up, he'd say, right, you do this gig, I'm off to Wolverhampton, you'll be all right there, Morris is going to stay with you. And I would do the gig like that.
How old were you then?
I was 16, 17, doing gigs and talking on the mic. Because John used to work for Emperor Roscoe. He used to be a roadie for Emperor Roscoe.
Yeah, yeah.
So when I used to listen to John DJ, he used to DJ with this sort of mid-Atlantic style. And I was like, that, wow, it's fascinating. You know, because, I mean, I come from Jamaican upbringing, so it just wasn't there. So suddenly I started DJing like that. And then later on I tailored it down to me.
Yeah.
But I started DJing in the clubs in Birmingham. And then I had a phone call from the BBC at Pebble Mill, Radio WM. My first question to them was, how do you get my number? Because I was ex-directory. Because the DJ thing was going really well, so you do that. I was still working in the day as well. I was a stonemason by trade.
Really?
Yeah, I could build fireplaces and stone cladding, York stone and sandstone. You know, I got to know all about that stuff. And it was horrible.
Well, back-breaking work, but not for you.
Yeah, standing in the field at 6:30 in the morning in the middle of an old church or something, you're knocking down, just getting the York stone out of it, and you know, so somebody can have a nice fireplace. But, you know, playing on the weekend was always what I looked forward to. If I wasn't playing, then I'd go to Wigan Casino and dance to Northern Soul all night.
Right.
Yeah, and I went to Wigan Casino for 4 years, so.
Wigan?
Yeah.
Wigan had a casino?
It had a dance place called Wigan Casino.
Wigan Casino.
Yeah.
Like Wigan Pier. I mean, they're all illusions.
Yeah. Well, just like that, which was at the end of a canal.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I spent four years going up and down there. It was great. One of the best times of my life, meeting people from all over the UK. Again, it broadened my horizons to people travelling the length and breadth of the country just to go dancing all night. And I was like, wow.
So the music just completely got hold of your soul.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So take us back to the BBC. They knocked and they said, Des?
They said, would you like to, we'd like to have a chat with you about doing a show, a pilot for us. That was the word they used. And I said, what's the pilot? To which they said, we have a show at the weekend called Sound System, and our presenter's going back to Jamaica. So I said, okay. I went to Pebble Mill, which was amazing itself. You got to imagine, I'm 20 years of age, and I'm going in Pebble Mill, and I'm looking at, wow. And I'm so excited. I open the door, and I knock over somebody. I literally knock somebody over. And as I'm picking him up, it's Sasha Distel.
Ah, no.
And I'm going, and I'm actually saying to myself, it's Sasha Distel.
I just knocked him out. The heartthrob, the French heartthrob.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
So I picked him up and said I'm sorry and everything. And he said, it's okay, you know.
It's okay.
And John Pickles was the manager then. I remember speaking with him, and he said, yeah, we'd like to do a 20-minute pilot for our Sunday afternoon show, which is called Sound System, which was primarily a reggae show. And I said to him, well, there's a lot of funk and soul creeping into the clubs these days, and, you know, would it be okay if I played some of that? And he said, well, it's your 20 minutes. He said, do what you do. So I said, okay, and I gave it a go, and I got a call back the following week to go and record another one. And we recorded on a Thursday, and it went out on a Sunday, and it was 20 minutes. And this went on for about 6 weeks, to which I was amazed. And then I get a little check.
Oh, you got paid too.
I got paid too, and I was like, wow, I'm getting paid for this. And after about 6 weeks, I didn't get a call anymore. So come the Saturday, I said to myself, well, that was fun. And then I got a phone call on Sunday morning going, you are coming in today, aren't you? And I said, oh, well, nobody called me. They said, yeah, we're doing a live one today. So I went, oh. So I went down there. And they said, yeah, exactly the same thing, what you've been doing, just doing it live today. So did 20 minutes, did it live, no mistakes. Thought it was funny, laughed and joked my way through it. Really enjoyed it. They said, right, so you're okay for next week? Yeah, they said, right, next week you're going live from Handsworth Park. And there was 11,000 people. And I have the picture in my home now of me sitting at the outside broadcast with all the crowd in front of me.
So you're still 20 at this point.
I'm still about 20, yeah. 20, yeah, 20, 21, yeah.
Wow, so yeah. That's some story then. In the archives of the music legend that you are.
Yeah, I mean, I never really thought about it until later on in life when people started asking me. And they were taken aback and saying, really, you were doing it that young? And I said, yeah, I've never really thought about it. I just... Oh, yeah, I have.
So I have to ask back at the ranch then. So Mum, she's brought you to Birmingham for a good life and solid work. What does she think of the DJing?
My mum's always been fine with it. My father wasn't too keen.
Right.
He wanted me to... I was going to be a bus mechanic because my father was a bus driver, and he wanted me to be a bus mechanic. And then once I started thinking about it, I was like, okay, if I become a mechanic, now, don't ask me why I thought like this, but I did as a kid. If I become a mechanic here and work on buses, does that mean I can go somewhere else and work on buses? And I already wanted to travel.
You knew that, yeah.
I knew that at an early age. So I worked my way towards it, but I failed the medical. I was born asthmatic. I'm still got asthma. But they told me I'd grow out of it by the time I was 17, so maybe I haven't reached 17 yet.
Oh, dear.
But no, it's true. But I still play football and tennis and everything else. I learned to do all of that when I came to Spain. Because all the things I didn't do as a kid, oh, you mustn't do that, you got a medical note, blah, blah, blah. So when I went to Spain, I realised, you know, hang on a second, this is my life. I want to learn to play tennis. I want to play football. You know, I can swim. I am a good swimmer, and I want to learn to water ski. I want to go diving, and I do it all now.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So take us as from the BBC days. What was the progression then? You've done all sorts of things, well, including having your own record.
Yes, the progression from the BBC. I took the show up to 3 hours on a Sunday afternoon, and it was fantastic. And 4 years I stayed with it. Never took a break. I was there every Sunday, religious, and it just became my thing. We'd have reggae stars come in like Dennis Brown and Gregory Isaacs and your local stars, UB40, they would come in on a regular basis. Des would go a new single, you know, and I'd be playing it for them. And there was another show on another station in Birmingham, BRNB. They had Chris Kennedy Jr. And it was, we were kind of the men of Birmingham that were playing funk, soul and reggae. And our club nights were, you know, just fantastic nights. They were all full, all the big clubs around the Birmingham area. And after 4 years, I started seeing the mother of my son. And we went out and I decided to take a holiday. That was the first time I took a holiday. We went to Tenerife. And I'd never been to Spain before. My brother had been to Mallorca a lot. And he'd always been to Aranon. And he used to come back and show me these photos. And I really wasn't sort of, I was like, you know, because I was quite happy with my DJing and BBC and the radio and the club life and, you know, a nice car and this, that and the other. And I thought, this is it. This is the way life goes. Until I went to Tenerife and I realised, hang on a second. You know, this is just amazing. The warmth, the friendliness of the people. I had a friend of mine who was a male model, Kevin. And he had a bar there, and he told people about me, and he was playing my cassettes.
Cassettes? Yes. That dates you, darling.
Yes. He was playing my cassettes there, and everybody that I met and got introduced to, they'd go, oh, you're Kevin's mate. We listen to your music. It's really, really cool. You should come down and play one night. With that, I got asked to DJ in a bar out there called the Crow's Nest.
Well, this is on your holiday?
This is on my holiday.
Right, okay.
The guy's name was Daniel Gonzalez. His son runs the business now. And I said to him, well, you haven't heard me DJ. And he said, oh, you're Kevin's friend. He tells me you're a good DJ. That's good enough for me. And that didn't happen in Birmingham. In Birmingham, you'd have to go and do a trial for an hour to see how you sound, how good you are. And many a time in Birmingham, I was told I was too futuristic with my music because I was learning to mix and blend music, which didn't happen. Most DJs chatted in between it every single track, where I was learning to blend music and mix and put it together. You know, Earth, Wind & Fire, Boogie Wonderland and stuff like that. I was already doing that at that time, which was quite a rarity. So it's 1986, I'm in Tenerife. I've gone there for a holiday and I've loved it. I decided to stay. I'd actually done DMC Mixing Championships that year and I got to the final. I was beaten by Chad Jackson, who then made a track that went to number one. It'll come to me in a moment. But he beat me in the competition at the Hippodrome in London. And a little disappointed, but that was one of the other reasons why I took the holiday as well, just to get away from everything. And so life changed. It changed again for me. I went back to the BBC after the holiday and said, look, I'm going to stay out in Tenerife. A guy called David Higgins, who came from my town, was a good DJ. I showed him the ropes of how the show went and stayed with him for about 5 weeks. Then I went off and he took the show over.
Right.
Yeah.
So you were a mentor for somebody else anyway.
Yeah.
So Tenerife was calling you. And so,
yes.
And so what did you do then?
I started DJing for the Crow's Nest. And the way I DJed then just wasn't on the island. It wasn't there. They had the Las Americas Strip, which is like the Magaluf Strip, full of bars and clubs. And I started playing the way I did my show. So I would play music, mix a couple, chat. But what struck everybody was the fact that you could hear me, you could understand me. I spoke clearly and people were just like, wow, this is great. So then I had other club bosses coming up to me and saying, can you find me a DJ that plays like you? So I said, yeah, I think I can. So I put a guy called Steve Welsh there, a guy called Bob Christie, guy called Paul Crawley, Paul Van Raymond, there was somebody else. I think I put like 60, Alfie O'Neill, Steve Foster. Yeah, I put about 8 DJs there by the time I left. I was quite proud of that.
But you, would you say that what helped you then was having worked with the BBC and having to enunciate in a certain way?
Absolutely, without a doubt. And I've took that with me wherever I've been. It doesn't change so much nowadays when I'm standing in front of a microphone, a little bit, but I do want to make sure that I want to be understood. I think that's very important. And I do help DJs, and I do try and teach DJs things like that. Yeah. Especially with Diaste, they're always kind of, you did what? Yeah.
So you're in Tenerife and you're settled and you think you're there for the duration, or have you got plans?
No, I thought I was settled. Alison became pregnant with my son. Yeah. I'm really enjoying the island. The work is fantastic. I'm working for Bobby's Bar, which was probably the most famous bar club on the island at that time, way before TV came and launched themselves onto it. I've got two other DJs working with me. So life was great. You know, I'm playing music from 1 o'clock in the morning until about 3:30. That's it. The other guys are taking care of everything. They're starting, they're ending, and I'm going home and, you know...
Got a life.
Yeah,
well.
I got a life.
Fun and having got a life, yeah.
Yeah, life was good. So I never thought about change. And I left Tenerife one winter to go to a friend's wedding in Canada. And I got there. It's January. I'm dying because it's just too cold. And the wedding had been cancelled and no one had told me. So I was kind of like twiddling my thumbs. He explained what was going on and he left and went back to England and left me there. But I thought, right, okay, we can make this work. Went to a what they call a cheer pool record meeting, and it was run by a guy called Daniel Calderon. The reason I remember these things is because he also became a really good friend of mine. And he had a record show called the Cheerpool Radio Show, for CIUT in Toronto. So he wanted to interview me because I was DJ, I played in from UK, played in Spain. He interviewed me. Of course, we started talking about different stuff. Producer walks in when we finished and goes, "Would you like to do a show?" So I spent 6 months working for CIUT doing a radio show.
So you stayed in the cold?
Yeah. Yeah. And what I discovered about the cold was, once it gets to May, the temperature jumps, you know, 25 degrees. Wow, it's fantastic. But then I could hear Tenerife calling me back, so I went back.
So wherever you've hung your hat, you've got a job?
Yeah, pretty much. Italy, East Germany. I've been to Halle, Leipzig, up to Poland, Miami. I mean, these are places I've done sort of... I don't mean I've been there and visited. I mean, I've stayed a couple of months, you know. And 9 times out of 10, I get asked to do an interview and, you know, would you like to do some radio or club work? And so, yeah, it's always been about DJing and music, clubs and radio. And I've done it all over the world, South Africa, Korea, spent a year in Japan, been to Guam, USA. That is an amazing place. You kind of, if you look at a map, look above Australia, come slightly to the left, up towards Japan, you'll see a group of islands. Guam is in the middle. It's owned by USA. Fantastic place, yeah. Fantastic place.
But you, you've made your money and your life and everything all around music and talking about it, yeah?
I wouldn't say I've made money.
Well, you've spent money.
I've definitely spent money and enjoyed myself, yeah. It's all been music-based, DJ-based. The records helped. I did a record release in 99, and in 2000 it went in the UK charts at number 5. Wow. A track called Welcome to the Dance. As I explain it to people, it's a noisy dance track. That's what I say. So when they hear it, they, you know, they expect it to be noise, which it is, but it was a good club track. It was the birth of that was I wanted to make a track that I could play in BCM. I'm playing in a club with 5,000 people in front of me, and everybody else is coming there and playing all this music, and I'm hearing all these different tracks every single day. So ideas are coming in my head and out my head, and I'm thinking, if I make a track, I want it to have that element, that element, that element. I did, and it went straight to number 5. So I was quite proud of that, obviously. I then remixed another track for DJ Quicksilver, which Watergate, Heart of Asia, and that went to number 3.
But this, you're ahead of your time here, because all the DJs are doing this now, but you must have been one of the first, yeah. Or the first.
I was definitely one of the first. Judge Jules was behind me. He came in the charts at number 6 that same week. And he phoned me up when we listened to the chart show. And he said, I just wanted to beat you. And he went, I said to him, yeah, but everybody wanted me to beat you.
Fantastic. So you're a legend. You're a real legend. So Des Mitchell, the legend of Mallorca. How are you based here now then? What happened with BCM?
BCM was a 15-year residency. They
15?
Yes. Right. They sent for me. I came. I was very reluctant because I had a little bit of courage. So I would, you know, if I said no, I would mean no. And they said, just come and take a look. And I came to the island and I was driven round the strip. Right. And they were showing me bananas. Yeah. And different clubs. And I said, yeah, we got a Bananas in Tenerife. Yeah, we got one of those. We got a Boomerangs. And, you know, we got a Jokers. And then they drove around the corner and pulled up in front of BCM. And they said to me, you haven't got one of them, have you? And I went, that's a club. So that was how it started. And I went in on the first night, sat there, watched the proceedings. Went in on the second night, sat there, watched the proceedings again, realised the proceedings were exactly the same, and I thought, how boring. And then on the third night, they said, right, you're playing tonight. So I changed proceedings a lot, straight away, to which everybody went, oh, what are you doing? The people don't like this. And that was one of the biggest problems they had. They were concentrating the club or basing the club on how the management liked it, not how the people liked it. Well, I play to people. And I want people to enjoy it. So within 20 minutes, people were going nuts and enjoying it. And I said, they're loving it. I said, I'm really not interested in what you think. I want to know what they think. I said, that's what you need. And of course, the next day, people were going, where's the black guy? We want him back. So that's how I came here.
So was it tricky, this relationship with the guys that like to do it their way?
Incredibly. Incredibly. It took... I went backwards and forwards to Tenerife 5 times before they actually went, okay. All right, let's you stay and you do it your way and let's see how it goes. I was like, really? And they said, yeah, okay. And that's how it started. The end of the first year, I have to say I was stamping my feet a little bit, just some of their ideas, you know, they were a little bit silly and... I spoke my mind and I left, thinking, oh, I'll never get asked back. And they sent somebody to UK. I was in UK at the time. Was getting ready to go skiing, Austria. And they come, took me out and said, he'd like you to come back. I said, come back where? And he said, BCM. I said, can you remember how last year went? And they said, yeah. Totally different DJ box. It's going to be all yours. We're going to put the team around you. And that was the start. And I stayed 15 years later.
So after that, it was all kind of wine and roses then, was it?
Yeah. They would actually, you know, we would communicate. It was good. I'd get looked after. And this was in a time where, you know, when you came here as a DJ, you didn't have your flight paid. You didn't have your own apartment, you know. So if you came here for a job, even if you were working at Banana Joe's around the corner, you had to fend for yourself until you got your first month's wages where you could go and get your apartment or whatever. I had my apartment ready and waiting when I got here. They paid my flight. I said, I'm not coming unless that's done. And I had that for like 10 years. So I was, you know, I changed things.
Yeah. So there's a lot of DJs right now on this island that are probably quite grateful to you.
I would like to hope so. Yeah, I would like to hope so. It's not something I need to shout about, but I hope so. I have got a title of being the DJ God, which has been given to me. So
the DJ God?
Yeah.
And so, you're spreading your largesse and you are helping younger DJs coming on to fill the shoes of all the other clubs.
Yeah. Still to this day, I'm still doing it, still helping people. Whether it be music production, whether it be in how to go ahead... I play in the Maldives in the winter at a place called Six Senses Lamu, and every 3 months they change the DJs. And the DJ has just sent me a message saying that he's going out to Six Senses Lamu, and he said, I understand that you've been out there. How do I approach it? And I replied and said, you know, well, first of all, the music is very chill out, calm. I keep it on a very soul level. Aretha Franklin, Chaka Khan, Barry White, you know, I keep it Lou Rawls. I keep it like that. And that works because of your audience clientele. You're talking about people that are 35 plus. It's not a kid's place. It's a cool, chill-out place. And, of course, the people that can afford it.
Yeah, they've got money then. So what's your experience when you're at the Maldives? What kind of flat do you get there? Do you get a beach house?
I get the beach house. I get the sea villa, actually.
Really?
Yeah, with the glass floor and the bits. And you can, yeah,
it must be awful to spend your winters like that.
Yeah, I hate it.
How long have you been doing that?
I did my first one in 2006 for the W. Where I entertained Dolce of Dolce & Gabbana. The funny thing about that was the day before he came, they were saying, oh, yes, he won't be coming into the club. Straight away he was in the club drinking vodka shots, and he sent me one. And then the next day I was having a coffee at the beach bar, and he came over and he said to me, very nice music last night. And I went, that's Dolce. And I have the photo to prove it.
Oh, you're such a stargazer, such a stargazer. So, 2000 and when did you start with Maldives?
I started in 2006 at the W. And then I've done another island called Candooladoo. Fantastic name, just love it. It's 6 minutes to walk around that one.
The whole island?
Yeah, the whole island, 6 minutes. And if you stand at a certain point, you can actually see where you've just walked from and going to. Amazing, there's only 10 villas on it. And I was invited to go there and play some music and do some diving because I'd met people in the W.
So hang on a minute. You've got 10 houses and you went there as the DJ. I mean, how many people do these houses hold?
Two, normally.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. That's the
private party.
Yeah, it's exclusive. It's fantastic. There's one island there with just one villa on. And you get the villa and there's a hut for the staff. The staff get boated in. And they look after them for the day, then they boat out, and then they come back the next day. And that's €11,000 a day to rent that.
Right, okay. Yeah. So, this is people with a little bit of cash.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that's your life then. How many months a year do you spend there?
Three.
And in those 3 months, you're still talking to us in Mallorca, though, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
You're still doing a programme.
I do my programme, record it, send it back. We do live links. We do live phone calls. Obviously, because of the time difference, it's 5 hours ahead there from Mallorca. But it's fantastic. And I've got to a stage in my life where I'm enjoying everything. I've always enjoyed it, but even more so now. Why not?
Well, tell us where Radio 1 come into your life. How did they knock on your door?
Well, I've known Richie...
Radio 1 Mallorca, that is.
Yeah, I've known Richie from his days of being a pirate. And the funny thing about that is when the pirates used to finish, they used to come to BCM for a night out. And I always used to say, oh, pirate posse in the house and blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, my daughter, Kirsty, I used to take to pirates every year. And Richie would do all the introduction for the pirates. And he would see me and he would say... In BCM, I used to say, good morning, welcome to BCM Planet Dance. That's how Welcome to the Dance was created. We just shortened it. Good morning, welcome to BCM Planet Dance. Good morning, BCM, and welcome to the dance. And that's how it came to that. And Richie, whenever I used to go into pirates, always used to say, good morning, welcome to... And he'd look at me and go, pirates. So we always had a good rapport and a good connection with each other. And obviously with... Lunar Radio that came and went.
Yeah.
I was doing my TMP show with them, which is the Mitchell Project, which is my sort of upfront dance show. And I do a show on a Sunday called Soul Kitchen, which is my soul classics from years gone by. That's my love.
That's your heart. Yeah,
that's it. If I could do that every day and get paid for doing Soul Kitchen, I would. I just love it. There's so much... So many classics you can play, because you can play slow classics, you can play ballads, you can play dance classics, all old soul disco, fantastic, love it. And when Richie started to put Radio 1 Mallorca together, he invited me for a coffee and we sat down and talked, told me what he wanted to do, and I said, yeah, I'm interested. So I said to him, he wanted my TMP in my soul kitchen, and I said, who's doing your drive time? He said, well, I haven't really thought about that. He said, I'm thinking of the computer at the moment. And this is when Radio 1 Mallorca was online radio. And he said, why? Do you got someone in mind? And I said, yeah, me. He said, you want to do drive time. And I said, yeah, but I want to do it a dance drive time. As in, there's a lot of tracks that come out that, yes, you know them as one style, but there are dance versions of those tracks. I said, and those tracks still need to be played as well. And I would like to do a drive time by playing those tracks. And he said, well, I don't think it'll work, but I'm willing to give it a try. And since it was online radio and I wasn't getting paid, he got nothing to lose. So that's how that started. So I did 6 months like that.
So right now then, the drive time is quite a difference, because this is a question I'd like to ask, actually, because you are a DJ and you are a star. You're a star in your own right, in your own world, but drive time must have been more of a presenter's role.
Yeah.
So how did you get on with the difference between the two kind of styles?
Well, I have to go back to my early days when I used to hang around with Johnny again, because he used to do his DJing like it was a radio show. He sounded so awesome. He really did. Rest in peace. And
Johnny?
Johnny Olsen, that's the guy who taught me
right,
to DJ
yeah,
and everything.
Right, your mentor, yeah.
And when I joined the Beeb, I used to go down to the Langham. And, of course, I'd get invited into Radio 1, and I got to know people like Steve Wright and stuff. Mm. So I used to sit there. And then I started making Steve Wright some jingles, just like Jamaican jingles and things like this. So I started to listen to how he presented. And I wanted to do a show like Steve Wright.
Yeah.
But being, you know, a young black kid playing funk, soul and reggae, it's not going to work. So I went for the more presenter image, but still keeping it a little bit funky, a little bit cool. So fast forward to Radio 1 Mallorca, it was the same type of thing I wanted to do. I just knew that I had to be more more presenter, more on point and more precise, especially with the news and things like that. And yeah, I think I'm doing okay.
So you have to balance then the needs of the advertisers, the breaking news, the charity events that you're constantly plugging, which do such great work for the island. So all this must be quite a big change, a sea change, really, when you really want to play the music.
Yes, it was a change, but I knew that it was going to be a challenge when I took it on. I mean, for example, I did the breakfast show for Richie and Aisha when they went to UK, it'd be about 6 weeks ago now, and Richie said, I'd like you to do the breakfast show. And I have to say, I said yes with some trepidation, because I thought, the breakfast show. So I started going in, sort of the week before, the Thursday and the Friday, and just sitting in on the show. And I realised there was so much things that they cram into the show. I was thinking, how am I going to do this? I've bitten off too much, you know. But I did it. And apparently there was bets going around that I wasn't going to make some. But I made every single morning, 7:30, I was there to press the button. And I did change my regime that week and went to bed at 11:30 and things like that. I have to say it was total opposite to what I'm used to. I'm used to being up at 3 in the morning and going, oh, I think I'll just go and record a mix right now, because I've got a little room at home with equipment in, so I can do that. But radio's it's a totally different world from the DJ. You become a presenter. You have to realise, I was always taught one thing at the BBC. I was asked by my producer, June Harbin, I'll never forget, she said, who do you talk to when you're doing the show? And I said, people. And she said, no. She said, talk to one person. You make that one person listen to you. And that's never, ever left me. So, and I tell that to other people that are doing radio as well. So
if we take a Des Mitchell year then, so just as you jet off for the next 3 months to the Maldives, even as we speak, but the rest of your year, I mean, how many places, so are you based completely in Mallorca now? I mean, what's your story now?
Oh, I've been based here now for the last, I would say, 15 years. It's been home base.
Yeah.
I jet off around the world, but whenever I say I'm going home, this is home. That's for certain. And summers, obviously, your work increases more because the bars and clubs come into play then, and you're playing bars and clubs not only here, but you know, Alcudia, Calador, and wherever I'm needed, if we can fit it into a diary and do it, I'll do it. I don't have a qualm with that. I love to play. And I love to play every night still. Yeah, if I have a night off, I'm kind of like, yeah, there's great TV, but I'm like, okay, I'll stop in tonight. You know, I have to force myself to stop in. And I'm partial to a nice drop of red, so, you know, I don't mind going, oh, if I'm going to stop in, I'll open a bottle of red.
Mm-hmm. What about the Ibiza scene? Is it yours?
Been there, done that. Played a few times. Used to play El Divino. Did a residency for Eden, where I spent the whole summer out there. But even then, I was still flying backwards once a week to play for BCM. you can't get away from Mallorca. I have a friend here, which I found out. I didn't realise he was doing that. He was working for Eden as well. He was one of the managers, English guy. And I didn't realise that he got an apartment in Benidorm. And he flew every evening on the last plane out to Ibiza and caught the first one back every day. And I said, what? He said, I sleep in my own bed. I wake up in Mallorca. I have my breakfast with my girlfriend. And life carries on. And then in the evening, I go to Ibiza. And I take care of all the crazies. And I thought, wow, you can do that.
Well, you can do that because really you're talking about a 20-minute commute.
Exactly. And I'm going to be doing some of it in 2017. So,
what is your 2017 looking like then? Can we have a preview?
Well, I've been doing some stuff for Danny Howard, who's Radio 1's dance DJ in UK. I've been doing some of his nights. It's called Nothing Else Matters. I was closing his party through the summer at BCM on a Tuesday night, which was awesome, fantastic. We're doing that again this year. Apparently the night's going to be moved to Thursday, so that's guaranteed. I'm going to be doing some stuff for Nikki Beach in Ibiza, hence I'm mentioning the commute bit. I'll probably be doing some stuff here in Key West, where we are, Saturdays. And obviously Radio 1 Mallorca is a continuation. And then we fit in a few other things. I'm doing a wedding July the 30th. I'm doing a birthday party at Mood. I know these ones because they're friends of mine, and I'm doing them for them. So they're already booked in, and you know it's already looking good.
Yeah, great. You know, Des, this has been an absolute pleasure to talk to you because I listen to you on the radio, and I know parties that you've hosted that have been mega, and people still talk about them as being exactly that. And it's just a serious pleasure to talk to the legend that is Des Mitchell.
Thank you very much. Just mentioning on the party thing, I was just looking at some of the boats there. There's a guy called John who's got a boat here, and it's called Twisted. And he flew me down to Monaco 2 years ago to play on his yacht at the F1 Grand Prix, and gave me the whole weekend with the chauffeur and everything else.
You really do have an awful life.
It's terrible.
I mean, when you consider you could have been a bus mechanic in Dudley.
I do think like that, and I do go, yep, you know, I'm from Birmingham, but I love life right now.
Excellent. We can't say any fairer than that. Thank you very much.
No, you're welcome. It's been a pleasure. Thank you. How long was that?
43 minutes.
Wow.
Our aim at Street Invest is to put a trustworthy adult into the lives of street children so that they can support them in creating the most positive paths for their lives in the future. We work around the world, working on the street with the children where they are. For such a large group of children, the amount of funding available is tiny. Really, the funding that keeps organisations like Street Invest going comes from individual donors. Street children are the most abused, neglected, violated children, yet they are also the most resourceful, responsive and resilient children that we could have the honour of working with.
For more information or to make a donation, visit streetinvest.org.
Hold up.